listening to the Monday edition of the County Grapevine on 99.3 County FM. I'm Lynn Pickering. If you're a history buff, a sailor, or an artist, you'll want to read The Cruise of the Breeze, the journal art and life of a Victorian soldier in Canada by Marc Séguin. This is an excerpt from my original interview with Marc from 2018, which aired yesterday on The County Writes, The County Reads. We begin with John McCarthy reading a newspaper article from 1861.
We regret to see from the latest accounts from America that but little prospect now remains of an arrangement. Indeed, there is every reason to fear that war has actually begun on the part of the Southerners. No news having been received for some days from Fort Pickens, at Pensacola, Florida, then under siege by Confederate forces, led to the belief that communication had been cut off by the Southern troops. Major Anderson had been called upon to evacuate Fort Sumter at Charleston, South Carolina, within 48 hours. Surely for the sake of humanity, if from no higher principle, the time has come when we and other nations may interfere with friendly councils to prevent the horrors of civil war.
That's John McCarthy reading from the Portsmouth Times and Naval Gazette. And that's found in the book, The Cruise of the Breeze, the journal art and life of a Victorian soldier in Canada, by Marc Séguin. Now, let's begin with that passage from 1861 in England. Where was Henry at that time?
Well, Henry was stationed in Portsmouth in the UK with the British Army. He was an officer in the Royal Artillery. He had just graduated from the Royal Military Academy. He was commissioned as an officer in the artillery and had been stationed for a short time on the Channel Islands. And his regiment was sent back to Britain, and he was stationed there in Portsmouth when he read the news in the newspaper that the Civil War had broken out in America.
Well, later Henry's going to arrive in Canada, but before we get to that part of the story, tell me how you discovered Henry's journal.
A couple of years ago, I wrote a book about lighthouses in the county.
Yes, and we talked about that on the show.
That's right. And during my process of doing research for that book, I came across a reference to a journal that had been written, and I saw some of the sketches that had been done in the 1860s, and one of the sketches showed a lighthouse. That really intrigued me. So I did some digging and found that the journal had at one point been housed here in Prince Edward County in the archives. I approached the archives and they kindly searched for the journal, and all they found was an empty box with a note in it saying that the journal that they had in their possession at one time, it had been transferred to Library and Archives Canada in Ottawa. So I followed the path to Ottawa and eventually found the journal, had Library and Archives make me a copy of it, and about a year later, I actually saw the original journal myself in a secure conservation facility that they have up there.
Now, let's go back to Henry in the 1860s, and why was he sent to Toronto?
Well, the Civil War had broken out in the United States, and Britain had declared neutrality so that they weren't declaring support for either the Union or the Confederacy in that war. But at the same time, there was a lot of conflict. Some of the people in the North were upset at the British for having declared neutrality and not coming out on the side of the North. There was a lot of British merchantmen who were running the blockade that the U.S. had imposed on the southern states, and that was causing a lot of conflict. There was also a lot of talk in the U.S. that they didn't like all this imperial intervention in North America, and that once this civil war was over, they were going to turn their troops northward and invade Canada. Now, this was all a lot of talk, but it was in November of 1861 that one incident really sparked a very serious flame, a very serious diplomatic incident, and that was called the Trent Affair. There was a Royal Mail steamship called the Trent that was traveling from Cuba to the Virgin Islands. And on board the Trent, there were four Confederate diplomats. So this neutral British ship was stopped on the high seas by an American warship. The American warship fired twice over the bows of the The unarmed British ship forced it to stop. The U.S. Marines boarded the British ship and removed the four Confederates from the ship. This was a severe breach of international law, and the British did not take kindly to it.
I guess that could also be almost considered an act of war.
Well, a lot of people in Britain certainly considered it to be an act of war. Lord Palmerston, the British Prime Minister at the time, convened his cabinet as soon as they found out the news. And their response was that they wanted an immediate apology from the government of the United States, and they wanted the four Confederate prisoners released. But before even waiting for the U.S. to respond, they decided to send some troops to Canada. In fact, they sent 12,000 British regulars to Canada, and among those 12,000 was this young artillery officer, Lieutenant Henry Baines.
Henry now is in Toronto. He gets a month's leave. He decides with some of his colleagues to go sailing. And that's where the journal starts. I just want to read from page 106, which explains the type of boat they were on and who went with him. He says, "Our yacht was the Breeze, a wooden boat, cutter rigged, measuring 17 tons. She was built in Toronto, her owner and skipper being E.M. Hodder Esquire, the Commodore of the Royal Canadian Yacht Club. Of the crew, three were officers of the artillery station in Toronto, and one, a law student of that city who sailed regularly with the Commodore." How about, Mark, if you read the day they started out.
"On the morning of the 3rd August, 1863, my two brother officers, Woodfull and Harvey, and I left the new fort with our traps. I took as my equipment a uniform case and Busby ditto, filled with clothing, a gun and a perch, two fishing rods and tackle, a pound of tobacco and plenty of pipes, Tennyson, Owen, Meredith, and Mrs. Browning, and a sketchbook. My blanket and watch coat were on board with all our kit. Harvey and I sailed down in my boat, Woodfull rowing in his. At the yacht club, several ladies had assembled to see the last of us, and they stood guard over a heap of miscellaneous articles, gradually diminishing as our attendant dinghies made rapid trips to and fro. On transferring ourselves and luggage to the ship, we found all hands knee-deep in a chaotic mass of bottles, demijohns, pies, fishing rods, ropes, greatcoats, and blankets. Slowly enough, things disappeared into the yawning well or gaping lockers, all hands acting as stevedores, and the Commodore working and superintending like two."
And so that was the day they were leaving on the Breeze. And maybe we just should explain a couple of words that you had in there in his journal. When he says, "I left the new fort with our traps."
Well, the traps, they were carriages, two-wheeled, horse-drawn carriages.
And he mentions his uniform case and a Busby. I always think of a Busby as that big hat, right?
Yeah, that's right. A Busby, he had with him a Busby case. Normally, he would have a hat in it. It's just a tin, just a tin hat box.
Okay, so instead of the hat, he would put other things in there.
That's right.
Yeah. And interesting that the books that he took with him.
Yes, Tennyson, Owen, Meredith, Mrs. Browning, all poets.
And, of course, a sketchbook. They left on that day. Describe their route.
Well, they sailed east from Toronto. Their object was to sail as far around the lake as they could and be back before the end of August. Their first stop was Cobourg. There was an annual regatta going on there. It was a large social event accompanied with balls and many house parties and just getting together with a lot of people, many of whom were from Cobourg but were also members of the Toronto-based Royal Canadian Yacht Club. From there, they sailed to Presque Isle, Consacon, around the county to Kingston. Afterwards, they doubled back to Prince Edward County, and then they crossed over to Sackett's Harbor in the state of New York. Then they made a number of stops along the Lake Ontario shores of New York State, including Oswego, Sotus Point, and Charlotte, which is the port of the city of Rochester. Then they finally were pretty much out of time. They had to make a direct sail from Rochester back to Toronto before the month was out.
Well, on August 10th, 1863, Henry and his crew arrived in Consacon, and by August 15th, they were anchored off Wapoose Island.
Harvey and the Commodore trolled all the morning in a very likely-looking bay, but only caught one pike, one bass, and one perch. We returned on board at 12:30 and found two natives of Wapoose coming to inspect us. Their conversational powers had been blighted in youth and had never recovered. At 2, we lunched, made a salad of potted lobster, cucumber, onions, and tomatoes. Also finished the last demijohn of half and half. After lunch, rain and sleep, consequently small appetite for dinner and restlessness afterwards. This found vent in an expedition to Wapoose Island. Harvey and Dugan rode me across to a farmhouse where we were affably received by the old farmer and his better half. We bought chickens, eggs, and milk from him, and had a long talk. Some heavy smoke we had noticed near Presque Isle when on our way to Kingston, and again as we were coming into Wapoose, he accounted for by telling us of a cedar swamp which had caught fire some 3 weeks before and was still blazing. The tract of marsh and swamp extended for miles. $1,000 worth of timber, besides several barns and a few horses, had been destroyed. Then he talked of himself, how he had emigrated when very young to Canada, and what a good country it was, how the last wolf on the island migrated to the mainland 17 years ago, how they caught huge sturgeon in the bay, and that it was called Eel Bay from the number of those fish in it, how there was no church near enough to go to, and a clergyman had not been on the island for many a long year. So the old man talked on, and the good wife went outside and wrung the necks of some unhappy fowls, and the daughters came tittering and rustling downstairs and pushed the door ajar to get a peep at us, and fled affrighted when we turned our heads. Then it was time to return to the ship. It blew fresh, the sea was rough, and it was some time before we could make out the ship's lights. Harvey and Dugan gave way with a will, i.e. they rowed the dinghy with all their might, and we soon reached her. Having read all our books, we turned in at 9.
That's John McCarthy reading from the journal of Henry Edward Baines, the young British soldier who captured in words, watercolors, pen and ink, and pencil sketches the cruise of the Breeze. Well, Mark, what happened when the cruise was over?
The cruise was over, and Henry went back to his life in garrison in Toronto. At that time, it would have been a life of routine, his military duties taking up really only a couple of days every week. And in between, he would visit family. He had an uncle who lived in Toronto, and he would go on endless rounds of socializing and balls and parties. And in Henry's case, because he was really interested in his surroundings, he would travel in and around Toronto and make sketches and paintings, traveling as far as Niagara Falls to sketch and paint in that area.
And when was he transferred to Quebec and why?
In the spring of 1865, the American Civil War ended. And at that time, the British Army started to send a lot of its troops back to the UK. And they distributed or redistributed a lot of the soldiers who were already stationed in Canada. So Henry Baines, who was with his regiment, the Royal Regiment of Artillery in Toronto, he got moved with his artillery battery to the city of Quebec.
That was in May of 1865. A year and a half later, he's in Quebec. And what happened then?
In October of 1866, a major fire broke out in the lower town of Quebec City, in the suburb of St. Roch. The local fire brigade couldn't handle the rapidly spreading fire, and they called on the military to help them out. So Henry Baines, his battery, and a number of other regiments were called down to the lower town to help fight the fire.
I'd like you to read from page 204 in the book. And this is from a Quebec newspaper, Le Courrier du Canada.
It was about 11 o'clock a.m. and the conflagration, after having swept away most of the buildings which lined the streets contiguous to the wall enclosing the hospital on the eastern side, was on the point of attacking a brick house situated at less than 20 feet from the large white store of the hospital. There was not a moment to spare, and the only chance remaining to save the monastery was that of blowing up the threatened building. At this critical moment, Lieutenant Baines arrived on the spot with his brave artillerymen. He immediately ordered a keg of powder to be placed in the brick building and, with intrepidity bordering on temerity, himself prepared the fuse amid a shower of fiery fragments driven in every direction by the hurricane. The brave lieutenant had just left the building and was calmly making his way for cover behind the wall of the hospital when a terrific explosion was heard. The brick building was leveled with the ground. The hospital was saved, but its rescuer was buried beneath the debris. Lieutenant Baines was immediately carried into a small chamber in the hall of the infirmary on the first story of the hospital, where he was laid on a bed, around which were soon gathered the physicians who pronounced his wounds mortal.
And so Henry died as a result of the Great Fire in Quebec. When you started your search, you didn't realize he had died so young, is that right?
That's right. I was really quite surprised, just quite shocked when I found out that he was killed in the performance of his duty in Quebec City. It was very shocking, and even more so considering that he was very young, just 26 years of age.
That was Marc Seguin, author of The Cruise of the Breeze, The Journal, Art, and Life of a Victorian Soldier in Canada. John McCarthy read excerpts. Stay with the grapevine. I'll be right back to tell you what's coming up tomorrow on the show. You're listening to 99.3 County FM, the voice of the county.